Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, cause it's root for the home team. They don't win, it's a shame, cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get Two, the baseball podcast from the fan's perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
Welcome to Let's Get Two. I am your host, James Christopher, and this was supposed to be the opening week for minor league baseball, but like so many other things in our country right now, we are delayed, we are paused, we are in a standstill. We do want to say before we jump into the show, just a thank you to all of the first responders out there, all of the nurses and doctors that are continuing to work, and all of those people that are deemed essential who are essentially going out into the breaches, as it were, to keep this country running as best it can while we all do what is the right thing and do our best to socially distance. So hopefully this show will be entertaining. It'll be fun. It'll be informative and something to kind of take your mind off of what's going on outside of our doors. Now, with the start of the season still in doubt, though, it does mean that we've got to talk about something that's a bit of a downer to start off. We've talked on this show about minor leagues contraction, the attempt by Major League Baseball to trim at least 42 teams from the affiliated minor league ranks. And more red flags have shot up about that in the backdrop of this pandemic. Now, we've talked a lot about the contraction plan. We've had guests to talk about it. We've done special episodes of it, and we will continue to talk about it. It's that important. But I wanted to point out a piece by Keith Law in The Athletic that really breaks down a lot of the different angles of this in much greater detail than we've been able to do on the show. And first of all, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, you should be, but I think they're doing a 90-day free trial. So take this opportunity to check out Keith Law's article. One angle Mr. Law broke out that I thought was great because it was something that I had suspected, that GMs of minor league teams that we've spoken to suggested, that so much about this contraction is really nothing more than a real estate deal. Think Lex Luthor from Superman the movie, but baseball and fewer nuclear weapons. But I had long thought that part of the angle of Major League Baseball wasn't to necessarily reduce drastically the number of minor league teams, but in fact, to maintain ownership of the MILB, either those teams or to remove some teams and replace them with teams that they do own. And there was not a whole lot of proof for this, not a whole lot of evidence, just a lot of conjecture by a lot of people. But then Keith pointed out in his article that the Pirates ownership had tried to buy the Batavia Muck Dogs and the West Virginia Power from Charleston, West Virginia. They were turned down because the franchises were seen as more valuable than what the Pirates wanted to pay. Next thing you know, the Muck Dogs and the Power end up on the contraction list. Now, you can look at a lot of reasons why they're on the list. I've not been to either of these clubs. I don't know what the facilities are like. I don't really know what their road trips are like, which are the two big sticking points that minor league baseball has been told they have to fix. But it also doesn't take a huge leap and a huge lack of faith in the human condition, quite frankly, to see this as an attempt to drive the price down. I mean, think about it. If you put them on a list that says you might not be a minor league baseball affiliate in 2021, you risk losing sponsors. You might lose fan interest at that point. There are lots of things that can do to basically encourage the owners of the Muck Dogs and the owner of the Power and other teams to now want to sell to get out of what is a pretty hefty investment that heck is really probably only profitable on the margins and in part because you share an affiliation. Like any investor, you would dump the asset. Now, on the surface, it is billionaires and millionaires fighting. And I understand that automatically triggers people. And I am never going to criticize someone for being good at something, for working hard, making money. I'm not a millionaire. I have made a series of life choices that said I'll never be a millionaire. 7 years in the military, deciding to go into independent film with a backup of a history degree to start an independent film festival focusing on movies made by people that are wonderful and smart and beautiful, but not famous. And then, of course, deciding to do a podcast on minor league baseball and devoting my time to that as opposed to trying to climb my way up to covering major league teams that would have therefore improve our visibility. But that's just me. Those are choices I made. But it isn't just billionaires and millionaires fighting. These millionaires own these teams that do so many things for the communities they're in. They provide jobs. They provide morale. And some of these teams in cities like Binghamton, cities that have already been ravaged with economic depression, having losing industries left and right, it's one of the few things the city has. They are essential. And I'm sorry, but to use the pandemic to cover and go ahead with your business deal that's going to rob towns and small business owners of these teams is, in my mind, equal to war profiteering. Now, how are they going to do that? Well, let's see. There's already been a lot of talk. As we know, the season's delayed. There's already been a lot of talk that we might see Major League games starting in empty stadiums before we get to have fans. And that while I do think teams that at the AA and AAA level will get their players, there's already been some conjecture, some thought that they might just reduce the short season, the low A and the high A, to playing at the spring training complexes. So that way the players can still be developed and not traveling, citing the fact that their season would start so late. What's the point? The point is, you're using this pandemic as an excuse to undervalue an asset you either want to eliminate or buy by saying it's for the public good. The logic doesn't hold water. If it is eventually going to be safe enough, as Major League Baseball has said it would be, to hold a baseball game in Houston, Texas, New York, New York, and in Los Angeles, California, then it will be safe to hold a baseball game in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in Batavia, in Charleston, West Virginia. If it's safe in major metropolitan areas, then it's going to be safe in the small towns in the Appalachian League. Diseases don't spread more with fewer people. That isn't how it works. If it was, we would not be locked up in our houses. So anyway, I want you to check out Keith Law's article. It is really, really well done, really well researched. And just take the time to look at that. He really spells out a lot of the other ancillary problems. And he's fair. I mean, it's a fair article. He's a lot more fair about it than I am. He's pointing out that there are some issues there. I admittedly am not going to do that because I think any of the issues they have can be worked through. But it's a great piece. I highly recommend checking it out. But the question becomes, what can we do? We're sitting in our homes for a week. And there's some stuff that we have planned with the show. I also do a movie podcast. We're not going to have that this week. I'm going to devote my bandwidth to, I'm calling it Minor League Baseball Awareness Week. We're going to be doing, I'm going to be releasing a video that's going to basically just a slideshow of me and all the different combinations of most of the teams I have gear for. Just to do my little bitty part with, you know, the relatively modest social media reach I have to let people know what's out there and to let people know what these teams are. And as per usual, a lot of these minor league baseball teams are working to fill the void that is being left open by not having baseball this week. And if we ever needed a distraction, now is the time. You know, a couple of teams that are doing something, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, who I mentioned earlier, were supposed to start with the Rubber Ducks on Thursday. So they're going to play the game on MLB The Show, and they're going to show it on WICZ-TV. My home state Corpus Christi Hooks have a whole week planned called Spirit Week. Those of you who play Texas high school football know what Spirit Week is. They started on Sunday where they played the Round Rock Express on MLB The Show, replicating the Futures game the Astros always hold. And the Express ended up dropping it 5-2 to the Hooks. Last night, they did a Netflix movie party on Facebook where they watched The Natural. Today, and I'm wearing mine, they want everybody to wear their Hooks-themed gear, including, like, if you want to wear something from the Hooks, the Raspas, the Dia de los Hooks, the Blue Ghost, the Coastal Bend, Christmas, any of that stuff. On Wednesday, they want everybody to share their way back Wednesday moment from when they were at Whataburger Field. And then on what was supposed to be opening night, they're going to do an opening night backyard bash. They want everybody to join them on Facebook Live. On Friday, they're going to have Favorite Hooks Friday. And on Saturday, Swagger Saturday. What would your walk-up song be is the question they are asking. So again, we're going to be doing our part too. And we're asking everybody to join us on social media using the following hashtags. We're going to use hashtag jersey on, hashtag tip your cap, hashtag MILB gear, and then hashtag save hometown baseball. So look it up, find out what your teams are doing. And remember this, this is something that I think that we really need to recognize. On the surface, minor league baseball is a great place to go, get a cheap beer, a dog, watch a game, and see really, really good players play baseball and have fun nights and just experience it as a community. That's what it is on the surface. It's also one of the first small businesses you go to sponsor your little league, to help with an event, to basically be an integral part of the community. And they are, for the most part, there when you need them. Whenever we get out of this, and we will get out of this, remember that so many of these teams are keeping things going and trying to keep things positive and keep people distracted from what is an awful picture being painted by the news. So remember that they're there when you need them. You need to be there when they need you.
Raiders of the Lost Diamond, a look into baseball's past.
And welcome back to Let's Get To's Raiders of the Lost Diamond segment, our look at baseball's past. And if you're thinking of the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, because yes, that's absolutely what I borrowed the name from, Mr. Spielberg, I said borrowed, not stole. That's key. But the little red dot, it wouldn't move anywhere, because today we are staying in Austin, Texas. With the Round Rock Express serving as our team of the week this week, we thought it would be great to look back at the history of minor league baseball in the Texas capital of Austin, Texas, baby. That's a reference to Vince Young. Austin, Texas, baby. So for those of you who don't know, Texas is big. It's so big that if you're driving from, say, Louisiana to Los Angeles or whatever, if you drive into the eastern border of Texas, there is a sign that almost is mocking you that says it's like 1,000 miles to El Paso, which is still in Texas. It's big. From our house in Austin right now, it really is. We drove to LA for a film festival, and it's in El Paso's halfway. I mean, it just is. So Texas is big. Lots of different kind of cities. San Antonio is one thing, and Houston's another thing, and Dallas, and in El Paso, and then, you know, Midland, Odessa. But Austin, we do it big, we do it weird. And for a lot of people, Austin means a lot of different things. For me, the first thing I think of is University of Texas. I'm a graduate. I graduated in 2007. I had a national championship in football and a national championship in baseball. At the same time, it was awesome. It's barbecue. Austin's not so much with Mexican food. We got some places, but really it's barbecue, it's good steak, and it's University of Texas. And it's a long tradition of professional baseball. So we have the AAA baseball team in Round Rock, the Express, who we're going to hear from a little later on in the show. And Round Rock is awesome because I love getting out to the Dell Diamond. It's just a few minutes. Well, when you factor in Austin traffic, it's a few hours up I-35. It's actually funny, from where I live in Austin, if the way the traffic's working, sometimes it's farther to drive to Round Rock than it is to drive to Minute Maid Park in Houston. Now, obviously, the drive back, that's a whole other animal. So while the Round Rock Express first took the mound at Del Diamond in 2000, pro baseball in Austin itself dates back to the 1890s. And on and off, the most seen brand or name were the Austin Senators, a name that was the moniker for several teams until 1964. They played in the Texas League, the Texas Southern League, the South Texas League, the Middle Texas League, the Texas Association, and others as well. They also played as the Austin Representatives. They had a few other names as well. They played most of their games at Riverside Park, which is just near the Congress Street Bridge, which is kind of amazing to think about because of how just built up that area is to think that there was a baseball field there. And for a very short amount of time, due to flooding and rain, which those of you who live in Texas know that that can come overnight and just wash everything away, they played in nearby Taylor, Texas. For over a decade, their longest affiliation was with the Milwaukee Braves and even played as the Austin Braves for like a minute. One of the things of note in Austin Senators history is they participated in one of the biggest blowouts ever. They had a 44-0 win over the San Antonio Bronchos in 1907. In that game, Austin stole 23 bases, scored 44 runs, 36 hits, and a lot of errors due to San Antonio's sloppy defense. They had 9 errors in the game. The 36 hits, for some reason, seems like an even bigger deal than the 44 runs. 36 knocks, 9 errors. Some teams don't go a whole year with 9 errors. In 1959, they won their final championship thanks to a no-hitter against Mexico City's Diablos Rojos. And what was really cool is, you know, back then, you especially if it was a minor league championship, you kind of just won and then you went home. And the Round Rock Express, being one of the classy organizations in all of baseball, for the 50th year anniversary, brought all the team members that were still alive to the Del Diamond and gave them a championship ring. Last year, we spoke to the Express about it on our show, and they talked about how, like, these grandkids, didn't know that their grandparents had played baseball, and there they were getting a ring. Very, very cool moment, and something that really connects the Round Rock Express, which, you know, sometimes people in Austin claim Round Rock, sometimes people in Round Rock claim Austin, and sometimes they don't, and vice versa. And one thing that's kind of cool is that the name has been resurrected in an Austin-based Sandlot League, which I guess proves that good names never die.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Team of the Week.
And so we are excited to welcome to our Team of the Week, the Round Rock Express, and we're joined by friend of the show. I think we can call you that by now, Mr. Andrew Felt. How's it going, man?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I got to be honest, this is a bittersweet interview for me today, because if you remember, we set today in case we couldn't meet up at spring training, and you're supposed to drop on April 6th or April 9th, excuse me, opening day, and yet here we are without baseball.
It's so hard to believe. I mean, that conversation that you and I had about spring training feels like it was 2 years ago, and it was probably 3 weeks ago.
It was weeks ago. I was looking at the date. Yeah. So just, I guess, walk me through real quick. I mean, was there a writing on the wall moment for you? Like, I'm Mr. like positivity in denial guy. And, you know, I had all these trips planned. I was bringing the world famous baseball traveler. He's basically taken his kids to all the minor. He was going to be at Round Rock opening day with me, and then I was taking him to missions and hooks. And was there a moment though when you said to yourself, "We're definitely starting late"?
Yeah, you know, for me it was. You know, we kind of always thought, because baseball hadn't started yet, we were still kind of. I mean, we were almost a month away from our season when it kind of first started to get bad. But the moment for me was, I think it was a Wednesday night when Rudy Gobert in the NBA tested positive, and the NBA shut down operations, and that started to get that uneasy feeling. And then it was the next morning that all the college basketball tournaments, it seemed like one after another, after another, after another, got canceled. And there was several of us on our staff that were in my office watching, I can't, maybe the Big East tournament, whichever one that had started, and they had canceled, I think, at halftime. And we were saying, oh no, it's only a matter of time now until baseball does something, whether it be a pause to spring training or a pushback at the start date. And we certainly never would have imagined at that point, 2 weeks ago, that we'd be sitting here with really no clear direction on where this thing's going.
Yeah. I even kind of got cart before the horse, and I was like, well, maybe MILB will still be okay because smaller stadiums and all of that stuff. And then it of course didn't end up that way. But one of the things that, I wanted to find out about was, like, season ticket holders, have they reached out? Have they been pretty cool? I mean, how has you got a really loyal fan base down there? How have they reacted?
Yeah. So my role with the Express is in PR and communications. And so that's the first thing that starts going through my mind is, we're going to get blown up with complaints and season ticket holders and vendors and sponsors. And, how do we react to this? We need to plan a statement or a plan of attack. And, I'm going through analytically in my head, trying to think through all these things. And really what we saw first of was there, we didn't really get a ton of communication from our season ticket holders. And I think there's really two reasons for that. One, I think, everybody's dealing with the fallout from this in different ways, whether it be their jobs that are closing or they're working from home, or if it's, different aspects of people's lives. And I think baseball kind of fell onto, the second tier of people's minds for a little bit. And then the other side of that too was, like you said, we have an awesome fan base, really knowledgeable baseball fans in Central Texas. And I think those folks realized, hey, this all is happening, unfolding in front of our eyes. And I hope that, they have the trust in us that we're going to do the right thing. And when we have a plan together, we're going to reach out and be upfront and be honest and do what's right by our fans. And so I think that those two things kind of came together, and it really wasn't this big swarm of questions and comments and unknown that we were kind of anticipating. So that's been a nice relief to it. But like you said, we're still in this position where we're not entirely sure, A, how long our season's going to be, what we can do with our season ticket holders, whether it be a refund or, an advance on next year's season ticket plan, or how many of our 70 games are even going to be able to play. So there's a lot still up in the air right now.
We're about to get to your best guess on that. But one of the things that I have noticed through this is it seems like in every walk of life, because, I'm obviously a baseball guy. I also teach, and then I'm also in film. I've seen, it seems like people at their best selves through this. The John Krasinski thing this morning, I don't know if you saw that, his good news newscast, but it seems like minor league baseball is really taking a lead in the community. And there's a couple things that Round Rock has done that I wanted to ask you about. So one, the whole spike in a member of the staff reading children's books, where did that come from?
Yeah, so we do a... it's Spike's Reading Challenge over the course of the season. It's a partnership we have with some of the schools in Round Rock ISD, and really just kind of an initiative to get kids reading and support the Express and kind of get our name out to the schools. And we give out tickets and all kinds of prizes for kids that read a lot. And so when all of this started happening and the school districts in Central Texas started to kind of shut down and say, hey, we're either going to go to online or we're going to extend our spring break, that was one of the first things we thought of. It's like, hey, you know what? Let's take this reading program that we already have and really blow it up and make it huge and, give prizes for when the season is going to start back up. And again, to help parents that all of a sudden are trying to work from home and be, home teachers and watch their kids. I mean, the whole thing. So it was one of those things where it just kind of clicked. It's like, you know what, this is a brilliant idea that we can fold our staff into, fold Spike into, and kind of help provide some relief for those parents that all of a sudden are turned into school teachers.
One of the things that you're also doing that I love, and I don't know how Round Rock feels about being folded into the greater Austin community, but you're part of the greater Austin community. Mm-hmm. And this whole Central Texas area is very proud of a lot of our like local restaurants and things like that. And to watch the people reach out of saying, look, yes, stay at home, all that stuff, but you can go get food to pick up. You can go to some of these local places that are going to do their best to stay afloat through this. And you guys have been sharing so many, like you shared Pluckers' information, things like that. I mean, again, how important is it for y'all to continue to support the partners that I know also support the Round Rock Express during the season?
Oh, it's huge. That's maybe second to our season ticket holders. That's one of our biggest priorities is, you know, like we were saying, everybody's going through this in their own way. And we have so many partners that are local businesses, local restaurants, you know, mom and pop shops that partner with us in various ways. And then obviously the big guys too, the Whataburgers of the world and the HEBs and just the amazing things that those organizations, St. David's Hospitals are doing for our communities. And it's kind of our way to say, hey, you know, maybe you have an ad in our program or an ad on the video board that, you know, obviously nobody can see right now because we're not having games and we're not producing that content, but hey, we're still supporting you guys and want to shine a light on some of these amazing things. And it's been really cool. We reached out to just about all of our sponsors across the board, all different industries, and said, hey, you know, what are things that you're doing to help the community? How this has impacted you? Is there any specific messaging that you want us to get out to our fans and kind of support you guys? And the response has just been awesome from, car dealerships that are having, you know, if your tire blows out when you're driving home from the grocery store to do certain things. And of course, the obvious ones, the hospitals and the grocery stores and the restaurants. But it's been cool to see. It's been really one big community effort. Everybody coming together, do what they can to help and try to get through this together.
Yeah, I know my wife and I have tried to responsibly at least every other night or something, do something local that way. And honestly, when you're stuck inside, just the trip, I mean, literally, we took a family trip to pick up a cable from her office and to pick up pluckers. And it was the best thing that's happened in the last two weeks. But now the last thing that you guys, not the last thing, but one of the things I want to talk to you about your social media thing and how you guys have been just communicating has been your backyard baseball thing, which I'm going to try to submit one if I can get my 44-year-old broken army body to move. But so essentially what happens is that you can create a backyard scene and Mike Capps, the play-by-play, the world famous play-by-play announcer for the Express, will call the play for them again. Like, whose idea was that? And was Mike just like completely down to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of those things where we have, so we've been working from home for about a week now, and our marketing department, each morning we have a Zoom call, all of us hop on and we just kind of brainstorm, share ideas. Everybody's kind of looking at different things and how can we, you know, adapt this to us. And we had seen Joe Buck had done something very similar and said, hey, send me your videos of you doing whatever, mowing the yard or sports plays or whatever, and I'll call it. And so we said, you know what, let's, you know, just a minor league staple, let's borrow this idea, adapt it to our market and send it out there. And we had, I think, 15 entries in the first couple of days. And so we called Mike and kind of explained to him the idea. And man, he was all over it. You know, he's just like the rest of us, just chomping at the bit to get back into baseball and to be calling games again. So he's having fun with it. It's been fun for us to watch folks submit videos and put Cappy's call to it. And so you'll start to see those more and more on our social media here in the next couple of days, but that's been really fun.
Well, like I said, I'm going to see if I can get my body moving a little bit and try to submit one, see if he'll do one for a 44-year-old man. So, you know, as you know, we don't have baseball yet. But I firmly believe that we're going to be back out at the Dell Diamond this summer. You know, what are just some of the things that you think we can look forward to? I mean, how are y'all handling like promotions that already happened? Are you just going to shift them later on in the calendar? How's that going to work?
Yeah, that's one of those areas that's really tough to kind of answer at this point. Our goal right now at the end of March is to honor every single one of our promotions that we had scheduled. Again, that's going to be a lot contingent on how many games you play, how many home openings we get. You know, there's a lot of unfortunate sides to this, and baseball seems, you know, such a minuscule part of this whole thing. But all of our promotional items had been ordered, and most of them had arrived. A lot of our giveaways, you know, we booked concert dates, and so we're working hard to reschedule those and try to fit those in. And but really, where it is with not knowing the schedule, you know, when this resumes, are we going to just pick up where the schedule would have been? Are we going to have a new schedule? Just kind of all those unknowns. So we're really kind of in a holding pattern till we can start placing those. But yeah, I mean, we've been encouraging fans. If you've got tickets, hold on to those tickets. We're going to honor those somehow. Like I said, whether it be if it's, you know, a refund situation, if it's, we're going to make those 70 games up, we're going to advance them to 2021. And I think there'll definitely be a time for that, but it's been, with my marketing hat on, you know, it's been tough because we spend, I'm sure you see it all the time, the most popular question we get is, oh, what do you guys do during the off season? Well, we plan for the season. We have 70 games and we're going to do these giveaways on these days and these theme nights and book these groups to do concerts. And now 3 weeks before our season was supposed to start, all of that's out the window. So it's going to be a mad dash for us, I think, on a marketing side to place everything. But our goal is to get it in and make the most of the situation. And, you know, I think something that's been driving all of us across the our staff is just the idea of when opening day does come, folks are just going to be hopefully so excited to get out of the house, to see baseball again, to come out as a community and support the team and support us. And that's something that, you know, I think about almost every day, that it's really like a guiding, you know, goal to get through this craziness and get back to baseball as soon as we can.
I think absolutely. I think you're going to see crowds like we've never seen. Although I guess you guys always draw pretty well, but even the teams I've been to where maybe not so much, I think they're going to draw. I think particularly the political climate around minor league baseball and that whole storyline with MLB and stuff. But a couple questions. Team store, is it still open for online orders or is it completely shut down?
Yes, our team store, you can still go through order online. We've got our folks, again, working from home, but we've got somebody at the ballpark every day filling those orders, getting those shipped. So yes, rrexpress.com, we got links to the team store up and running.
Okay, and your best guess, when are we back playing baseball?
I think you know, hopefully best case scenario, we get to maybe the middle of May and Major League Baseball's feeling more confident about some sort of abbreviated spring training, whether it be almost like an NFL training camp type scenario that maybe goes for a couple of weeks. I think on the optimistic side, it's maybe early June, middle of June. And we're in the boat that, hey, if you want to extend the season past the first week of September and play into late September and early October, we're totally cool with that. So I think that's kind of mentally where we are right now.
On deck, the Let's Get To interview of the week, brought to you by Fine Line Sportswear.
Before we jump into our interview of the week with Eric the Peanut Guy, I do want to do a full disclosure. So lots of times when, particularly at the beginning of the season, we might record our interviews of the week and some of our teams of the week, even if they are our team of the week before the season starts early. We'll do it a few weeks early. We'll do it so that way we can make sure we have time to have really good interviews with people. And also they get busy, we get busy during the season. Unfortunately, sometimes that happens right before major news occurs. And we did our interview with Eric days before the season got shut down for the coronavirus. And I've been trying to figure out a way to bring it back and to have his interview shared without it feeling too weird or jarring, particularly since we do talk about March Madness. And it's like I said, it happened days before this happened. But as we face a little bit of time without baseball and what looks like could go on for weeks more at least, I listened to the interview and the dude's generosity of spirit and his positive attitude made me feel better. And I thought, well, if it made me feel better, it'll make the people that are listening to this show feel better. So what a better time to bring the interview out, even if it does remind us that the promising of a fun sports season and not just baseball, you'll know what I talk about when it gets there. It was maybe a little bit delayed. It's still, he's the right kind of energy, and this is the right kind of time to hear from him. We are excited to welcome to our On Deck segment this week. We are visited by Eric Mertens, known on Twitter as Eric the Peanut Guy. Eric, how's it going, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We are getting so close to baseball season that we can almost smell the peanuts, if you will. So we're going to start with all the sort of official questions I have to ask as a host of a responsible host of a minor league baseball podcast. How'd you get into baseball, man? Like, how did you first realize that this was a thing that you loved?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. First of all, this is an honor to be on this podcast. I listen to it often. I love your voice in the world of baseball, and I love that you talk about minor league baseball so much. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
For me, I grew up in a place called the Tri-Cities, Washington. It's in Washington State. And if you've never been to Washington before, you might not realize that a whole half, the eastern half of the state is a lot more sunny and a lot more temperate than Seattle and the west side. And so baseball was a huge part of me growing up because in the Tri-Cities, you can almost play it year round. It's in the desert. It's warmer. It's sunny. Everyone plays baseball, and big Mariners fan growing up. I kind of inherited that from my mom and dad. And when I was a senior in high school, the Tri-City Dust Devils, an affiliated minor league club, was moving to town. They're the old Portland Rockies, short season single A for the Colorado Rockies. Portland was getting a triple A team, so they moved the Portland Rockies to the Tri-Cities. And being in the desert, the name Tri-City Rockies didn't really make sense.
Right.
But we do have a lot of Dust Devils, and we thought that was a cool name. So anyway, that was my senior year of high school, which was also the same time my dad said, Eric, you need to get a summer job. You need to get ready to help pay for college. You need to get ready. So one of my best friends at the time had just signed up to be a peanut vendor with the Dust Devils for the inaugural season. And he was like, hey, we need a second peanut vendor. Do you want to come work with me? And I thought, working for a minor league team sounded awesome. Big baseball fan, and working with my best friend, Johnny. So at that first season, it was Johnny the peanut guy and Eric the peanut guy. And 20 years later, I'm still there.
So let's jump into the Dust Devils then. Like, there was a natural segue. Like, we call that a segue in the podcasting media business. You've jumped to the middle part of the interview, so we're going to adapt as best we can. But so, so you've been there for 20 years, and I know, like, a former student of mine works for the Round Rock Express. She's a teacher during the year, and she is there every single season. What keeps bringing you back to work for the Dust Devils?
Oh man, that's a great question. The first few years it was because I needed a summer job, so. When I was a college student, I would go home to the Tri-Cities every summer from college, and I loved working there. I fell in love with making money and working full time during the season at a minor league ballpark. There's just no better place to work than a baseball stadium. So after I graduated, though, from college, I had to decide if I still wanted to be there. But I'd kind of grown a persona. I moved from just being a peanut vendor to being the on-field host with the microphone, having fun in between innings. So it was kind of this character that I developed that was basically me, but just like a hyped up version of myself. And so not only did the fans begin to expect it every season, but it became a very important part to my life. I fell in love with the fans, with the stadium, with my community even more. And so I've been very selective, to be honest. Since college, I've only worked in fields that would give me time during the summer every year that I could go back. So I've worked in education. I currently work in ministry, in campus ministry at Gonzaga University, Go Zags. But that gives me my summers where I can return home every summer, see the family, work for the Dust Devils, and I keep coming back because, I don't know, man, I was hooked. If you've ever worked at a ballpark, like your teacher friend, you know, she must know that there's nothing better.
Yeah, and it what's interesting, too, is because – so Tri-City is a short-season affiliate, which I can imagine does give you a little bit of a little extra advantage because of your other job. But can you explain to people, like, what the difference between a regular-season affiliate versus a short-season team is?
Yeah. From what I understand, our season usually starts around June 15th, give or take a few days, which is usually right after the draft. So we get a lot of first year guys that just been drafted, you know, days before,
right?
Or we'll get, you know, second or third year guys, maybe some of the younger guys that have been drafted out of high school that need a little bit more time in the lower levels. They'll come to short season, and then we play all the way through Labor Day, and then playoffs are usually the week after Labor Day postseason. And so, yeah, the main differences are kind of the level of play. We're towards the bottom of the minor league ladder. But that brings a lot of really fun stuff too. Really a lot of young, hungry guys, a lot of their family and parents fly out to see them because it's their first professional gig. And it's been great. It's worked out well for my, for my work schedule because I can actually make the games.
So it really is the kind of thing. It's where, you know, a kid gets drafted. They get, like, if for Seattle, they'll go take a little photo, get to watch a pro game, and then they're on a plane or on a bus to wherever.
Right, right.
So now let's have some fun. So you are you also travel to baseball. You know, I think that you are like you, I know you've ran into people that we know mutually, like Ken Robertson.
Yeah.
What is your rhyme to reason to decide where to go?
Okay. So this is great. This is my favorite thing to talk about other than the Dust Devils. So thank you for asking this. Early on after college, I was really blessed. I was on a traveling ministry team that brought me to the 14 westernmost states. And we led retreats for high schoolers and stuff, church retreats. And my team was so awesome because if we ever went through a town with a minor league team, I was like, hey, can we stop at the minor league ballpark so I can buy a hat? Because I really like the hats. And they're like, sure, fine. And then, you know, the years after that, if there was a wedding or a family reunion I would fly to, I'd find the nearest, you know, the nearest ballpark, if it was during the season or not, because I wanted to see it. And my hat collection steadily grew. Well, about 5 years ago, I realized, wait a second, I finally have a job where I can afford to just buy a plane ticket and take a vacation. And there's no better vacation than just like pick a region of the country, get a rental car, and in the 7 or 8 days that I'm there, see as many minor league and major league ballparks as I can. So I've done that for the past 5 years. I've kind of, you know, sanctioned off the country in different regions. I started with the Carolinas because there's a lot of them there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Last year I went to Pennsylvania and upstate New York, and I've hit about 3/4 of the minor league ballparks. And this year, believe it or not, I'm heading to Texas and I'm going to be in your neck of the woods. And my girlfriend is actually joining me this year.
And you're going to let me know, and I'm going to take you to get some barbecue and we're going to meet in person, right?
Heck yes. You're in Austin, right?
I'm in Austin. So if you make it out to round, but I'm also, you know, have ball game, will travel. So I'll, if you're coming to anywhere, I'll go to Frisco. I'll go to Corpus. If you're going to be there, I'm going to be there.
Dude, this is awesome. Okay. Let's talk after the interview. And
absolutely.
We'll get it lined up.
So let's talk hats because
yeah. You,
so again, like, I feel like we've interacted like on the same threads on social media. First of all, how many hats do you have?
I have about 300 professional on-field baseball hats.
I have never felt so depressed about my only 75 professional baseball hats.
You probably have a lot more money in your bank than I do, though. So that's
yeah, I just have to hide the packages from when – because my wife actually makes the money more than I do. So it's like, oh, hey, yeah. This was important, I promise. So what – okay, so I have certain rules when it comes to it. I want to find out yours, like purely design, or are you only going like fitted on field? Do you get flex fit? Like, how do you make decisions on what to get?
Yeah, my rule is I have to visit the ballpark.
Okay.
Personally, in order to buy the hat, and then it has to be a fitted on field hat that a player would wear. So that's even like special theme nights or Copa de la Diversión hats. However, I just stumbled across like a year ago, I stumbled across Hat Club and some of those amazing websites and groups that make really cool custom hats based off of minor league logos. So I've succumbed to that. I've started broadening my criteria out of pure greed.
Right.
But for the most part, I try to get one hat from every ballpark I visit, or if someone gifts me a hat from a ballpark I haven't been to, then it would be rude to like refuse it. So I have some hats from places I haven't been yet, like my Houston Astros hat. I've never been to Houston, hoping to change that this summer, but my friend visited and she knew I collected hats. So that joined the collection as well.
Yeah. I think my criteria are similar. So I have to go. My wife also travels a lot for work. And so she will like, my first Durham Bulls hat before I went, she drove 2 hours out of the way just to buy the hat.
No way.
Yeah. She is
wife of the year.
Absolutely. Like she's the best person I know. And it's so funny because her friends at work will take her to lunch to like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You're on this 3 minor league baseball. And they don't know that sometimes they're her idea. She doesn't tell them either. She gets the free lunch. Or if they come on the show, or if they're a gift. So those are kind of,
yeah.
And I've kind of gotten, you know what I've also started doing? teams that were on the contraction list. I've actually gone and bought some of them too.
Good. Good. That's important to support.
And so are you ever do you wear them, or are they just purely for display?
I mainly wear the Dust Devils and my Seattle Mariners hats and my Gonzaga hats, which aren't baseball, but the rest are just on display. And to be honest, I work at Gonzaga University, which is in Spokane, Washington, and they have their team, Spokane Indians, who are in the same division as the Dust Devils. Oh. So I like to wear my Dust Devils hat a lot around Spokane just to stick it to the man. You
know? I love everything about that. So as we wrap up, we're getting close to the end. I want to talk a little bit about, because I've never once talked about this topic on this show.
Okay.
College basketball.
Ooh.
So the Gonzaga Bulldogs, they are 29-2. You're a great dude. The Longhorns are terrible. So I'm gonna basically back Gonzaga this season. You gotta be feeling good about them, right?
Yeah, it's a cool time of year. I mean, it's March right now, March Madness, and this campus is always. I'm on campus right now. I stepped out of my office for this.
Okay, great.
Which, yeah, good use of time. My team is awesome. They'll be happy I'm doing this, but I love the Zags. Here's a little insider tip. Gonzaga we are named after an Italian saint, Saint Aloysius Gonzaga. So Gonzaga is how you say his name. But for whatever reason, we've decided to make the pronunciation Gonzaga. So that's important to know. But this campus comes alive this time of year. I'm stoked. This was supposed to be not a rebuilding year for us, but kind of a not our most premier lineup, but we've been ranked number one or number two in the nation for the past few months, and we're feeling pretty good. And, you know, God willing, we'll go far in the tournament. Again, we've been in the Sweet 16, I think, for the past five seasons, which we're the only team to have done that. So hoping to keep that going.
I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but a guy I served with in like the late 90s actually played basketball for Gonzaga. And
no way.
We were serving together when I think that kind of that their rise to prominence kind of started, and it was pretty, it wasn't part of this previous 5 years, obviously, but it was kind of cool to kind of be hanging out with this dude and see some of his buddies kind of playing well. So, let's do some more hat talk. Favorite hat that you own, period.
Okay. I would have to say Dust Devils, but I know that's biased. So the next would be the Asheville Tourists.
Okay. Why the Tourists? Just the look or the history of it?
They redesigned their logo a few years back, and I think it's one of the most whimsical designs. It makes you feel like you're at a summer camp. There's stars. The color scheme is awesome. It's like a mint or a jade with a navy blue. So I'm going for that.
Okay. And now, favorite one of the rebrands or new teams of the past year?
Past year. Man, there's been some good ones, but I'm going to have to go with my friends just a little bit east of us here in Missoula, the Missoula Paddleheads. Not only is a moose just a great minor league mascot and logo, but their color scheme is so unique. I'm so tired of all the navy blue and red that like 95% of the teams do. Don't get me wrong, there's some good navy blue and reds, but Missoula with the green and orange, that's a good look.
That was my favorite. That them and the Norwich Sea Unicorns really was into that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to get a see. I visited Norwich with my mom when they were the Connecticut Tigers. So I have a Connecticut Tigers hat, but I need a Sea Unicorns one now.
I'll allow it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that works. So Eric, thanks a lot. He is Eric Mertens. He is the in-game host for the Tri-City Dust Devils. If you've not been out to a minor league baseball game, the in-game hosts are so important to the whole experience. Real quick, why should people make the trip out to see the Tri-City Dust Devils?
Oh my gosh. Please do. Please come out to the sunny side of Washington State. We have been called by multiple people who travel around the country. We've been called the friendliest ballpark they've ever been to and one of the cleanest. And the sunsets we get over the Columbia River during a game, you'll see nothing like it. So come on out. I will personally show you a good time. We'll give you a bag of peanuts, and it might be the best night of your summer.
Lights, camera, play ball, Inside Baseball Cinema.
And now here on Lights, Camera, Baseball, I do want to talk about one of the best movies about minor league baseball, and I am not talking about Bull Durham. Obviously, Bull Durham, it's a great film. It's in my top five baseball movies. It should be in everybody's top five baseball movies. What I'm talking about, though, is actually Major League 3, Back to the Minors. And look, it's not a great film. And it isn't something that's going to like redefine the baseball movie genre. But I actually had never seen it until I think last year, because it just looked silly. I'm a filmmaker, and I've seen enough movies where you try to squeeze a little bit of more blood out of that rock, or out of the rock. Anyway, the only time where the movie really suffers is when they try to wedge a connection to Major League through Serrano and through Tanaka. Other than that, the movie works. I mean, it's silly. It's that Major League type humor, maybe not as sophisticated, not as well done on a production value sense, but I like the capturing of the minor league thing. I mean, Scott Bakula is perfect as Gus Cantrell, the guy that it's almost like a more sentimental Crash Davis. I actually didn't mind Corbin Burnson reprising Roger Dorn because of the context in which he's sort of there. And I mean, who doesn't love Ted McGinley? So, it's a fun movie. I think it captures a lot of what the minor league baseball lifestyle is like, was like. I like the fact that they included the Salt Lake Bees and the Fort Myers Miracle, which were, at least the Miracle, were up until last year still around. So I think it's fun to check out. And maybe, again, you're not going to watch it and go move over The Natural. But if you're looking for 90 minutes of fun to remind you why baseball is a cool sport, I think it does that just as well as any other baseball movie.
This just in. News from Minor League Baseball.
So we do have some breaking news on Let's Get To, and we're bringing in our main guy, Scott McIntyre, to talk about it. Usually we talk about silly things, but Scott, you know, they have floated a plan, I guess, is what you could call it. And essentially the idea is that they sequester teams. They play in Arizona for an entire 162 with 7-inning no-hitter doubleheaders, which I don't hate, but no umpires, or I guess umpires a safe distance away. Teams don't sit in dugouts. They scatter through. Scott, all of it's silly, and it seems like we're just not ready to play baseball yet. Let's own that. What do you think?
These are not – first of all, I appreciate the sentiment. Let me say that. I appreciate the sentiment, the attempt to get baseball back as soon as possible. But this plan, as I see it, is absolutely riddled with flaws. Let's talk first. The 6 feet apart in the stands, there's no dugouts. Guys are sitting 6 feet apart. So do you only have to come within 6 feet of somebody to tag them out? You know, what happens if two guys collide in the outfield? Are there a 6 foot bubble of protection?
They wear those suits.
Exactly. Yeah. The big sumo suits. Yeah. They send people out at the end of the third inning to let's watch Bob and Ryan run at each other. It's just not, how do you keep 6 feet of distance on the field? Is the catcher going to move and not stand that close to the batter? You know, I'm really thinking that, and everybody does the walk up song, from the Police, Don't Stand So Close to Me. That in and of itself does not seem very wise, because then if you get one person, I've also seen as part of this rule, if one person on your team becomes infected, that's okay. You've got an extra player that you could then use, but that's not how it works. If one person gets it, a whole bunch of people get it. So
it's ignoring that basic scientific fact.
The worst part of the whole rule. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, but it's ignoring the basic scientific fact that we've learned that unlike other viruses, you can spread it if you don't have symptoms.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah. I mean, you could have guys out there completely healthy, and they're sliding all over each other. They're sweating all over each other. You know, the parks here where I live recently had to take the basketball goals down from the parks because teenagers were still going out there to play. Sometimes you've got to protect people from themselves. and that's kind of what still needs to be done here. And I don't know how in the world baseball would do that. So you don't get to shower after a game. You know, if somebody gets injured, do they not get tended to because we got to keep distance? I mean, obviously these are these are questions that are pretty silly, and the answer is, of course, somebody gets tended to, but it's not silly, because if you're doing something unprecedented, then you have to have standards in place and procedures in place for the little one-offs, right? And there's so many little one-offs with a game of baseball that I just don't see how in the world they can keep distance. So I don't think that's good. But that, to me, that's not the worst part of the entire plan. If you're going to use, there's a ton of, unlike Florida where you've got, you know, baseball stadiums spread up and down the coast for spring training. In Arizona, it's all collected within about 50 miles of each other. But they're not indoors, and it's Arizona.
This is what I wanted to ask you about, because to me, this is now going to lead to a quality of play issue. We're not going to see good play, because like if the plan is to basically play 162 games across 11 stadiums. And now let's be honest too, probably they're not looking at playing the whole season. Eventually, you know, they expect the NFL, for example, to start on time. Everybody does. So it does seem like at some point you might move back to regular parks. But for the sake of argument, you have to play some games at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Arizona.
But do you, or do you play them at 6 a.m.? I mean, see, that's where I'm
right. Exactly. It's so dumb.
Into ridiculousness. Because I'm sorry, if you tell me, hey, you're starting today. Oh, great. It's going to be 118 at 2 p.m. whenever we throw the first pitch. Yeah, no thanks. I hope I go four, you know, before I melt into the sand. And also, if the heat doesn't kill the virus, so that's not, or it may not, you know, that's not scientifically proven yet that it does or it doesn't. It's hoped to. So that's not going to help matters either. You can't count on it to help matters. And guys are going to be out there just melting unless they get to play in the Diamondbacks park. And do you let the Diamondbacks play in their home stadium? It's just, man, it seems really, 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 really silly to me to try to do this. I do appreciate the sentiment, but, you know, it's not fair. And what happens if a guy goes into a slump? Right. What happens if a guy's hitting, you know, .110 through a month? You don't have a minor league system where you can call somebody up. You can't send him down. What happens if a guy gets injured? Okay, will you pull another guy in from your organization who's been sitting on the bench for 3 weeks doing nothing with no gameplay like you would typically have from a AAA team? How do you handle that?
Well, that's another excellent point, because they have talked about expanded rosters, but they didn't talk about how expanded. Like, are you talking about your role in a 40-man roster, which seems to me what you'd almost have to do to survive playing games in 300-degree heat?
But didn't they just get rid of 40-man rosters? So what do you do now? And then also, to me, this is the most important thing. You're asking these guys essentially to sign up for a military tour and be separated from their families in some cases for over 4 months. And that, to play baseball? You know, I kind of feel like Allen Iverson here. We're talking about practice. You know, for baseball, you're going to separate yourself from your family for 4 months and expose yourself to the virus to play weird games when there's, you know, the only sport that I see that's still taking place right now and doing it sufficiently so, and it's not everywhere, but horse racing, because the horses still have to be taken care of and people still have to be there to take care of the horses. So they add the jockeys in and they just let the horses run.
It's like half a person in
baseball players aren't horses. So they don't, they can feed themselves. They don't have to be, this just seems really pressed, and it seems like you got people trying to make decisions before it's necessary. You know, oh, and here's the thing. It's not like the virus said, okay, well, we're going to go to all 49 states except for Arizona. You know, Arizona's closed, coronavirus. Sorry. Didn't you see the sign out front?
The moose out. I guess the armadillo outside should have told you.
The scorpion that was waiting at the state line should have let you know.
It's funny though.
It's just so bad.
You talked about sports that could do it, and I could see football being able to survive this even with no fans, because they do have a rapid test now where you could, you know, essentially quarantine a guy. You test everybody on a Thursday. You do your game week stuff. You play your game on Sunday. They're back home with their family right after the game. But baseball, like you said, isn't like that. The whole point of baseball is the marathon that is the sport. I would just rather, and you and I, we've had enough conversations. I don't trust Major League Baseball to do anything, honestly, for the good of the game anymore.
Correct.
This whole episode that you're in today and the episode that we had last Tuesday is all about how they are basically war profiteers using this to close down the minor leagues where nobody's looking. So, I don't trust them to do anything. I just wish that they would look at the projections. The projections say we should hit our peak sometime in the next couple of weeks. Why not report to a spring training in June and then essentially play a truncated season with some of the same rules you're talking about, but starting in July, where I do believe that either A, we're going to be well enough past this, or we're going to have made a cultural decision that says, hey, we've got to get some economy starting, or what will be the result might be worse than what we're dealing with. And then do some of those things you're talking about with the 7-inning doubleheaders, which you and I think a 7-inning doubleheader would be awesome. So that's the one part of this thing I don't
hate. Not on a long-term basis, but I think given this year and what's going on, yeah, absolutely. That was my question. Why can you only do a 7-inning doubleheader in Arizona, and why couldn't you go ahead and do it in St. Louis or Houston or Kansas City or Boston or wherever? And the reason being is, well, we'd lose ticket revenue if we did the doubleheaders. Yeah, but you're going to lose. Since we're going to have no ticket revenue, we're going to speed up the games and make it happen quick. But we want to get maximum ticket revenue if we're doing it in the actual town. You know what? Bite the bullet this year, guys. Everybody's hurt. Go to the doubleheaders for this year. Do it. Why not? What's it going to hurt?
Right. Especially like you said, you're talking about.
Come really close to get 162 in. Now, I do feel sorry for the guys that are scheduled to play a couple of 7-inning doubleheaders, and you get one game that goes 13 and the next one that goes 12. That sucks to be you. But that's going to happen. But man, just get creative. But I'm with you. You don't have to start now in the heat and push all these people together in a closed environment, which you really are doing. Oh, we're going to sequester them in hotels. So they're not going to eat breakfast together. They're not going to be around each other. They're not going to be teammates. I mean, this just seems so weird.
The thing I worry about too is I think about, you know, some of the best pitchers in the game right now are not young guys, you know, Kershaw and Verlander and Scherzer. How are those guys supposed to hold up on the bump in 130 degrees? I mean, dehydration's a thing. Like you really are in many ways, from a brand perspective and a game perspective, risking more damage than what COVID-19 would cause to your brand by just sitting it out like everybody else is.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think it brings way too many more risk in the game, and you run the risk of suddenly there's a spread of coronavirus through Major League Baseball. And I'm sorry, but Rob Manfred, you are to blame for that if that happens. And I don't think it's necessarily just the older pitchers that are going to suffer from the heat. I mean, exhaustion, sheer exhaustion make cowards out of us all. And I'm sorry, but you're right. 130 degree heat in July. Oh, well, we're going to play at 7 in the morning. Oh, okay. So it's only going to feel like it's 105. Sounds great.
Well, at least I guess that means Alex Bregman's definitely your pick for MVP, since he's used to that, having played high school ball there. So, you know what? Bring it on. Let's do it. I do want to actually get some more breaking news. I agree with Trevor Bauer. I listened to Trevor Bauer do an interview. I forgot with who. And, you know, he was talking about how the game is broken at a lot of different levels. And I think one of the things they need to do whenever they bring this season back, and I'm with you, I hope it's later and safer, they've got to address, and I kind of wanted your take on this, they've got to address their TV rules. They have to make this game more accessible to people regardless of where they live. Because I don't know if you knew this, but so where I live right now, I am considered to be both in the Astros and the Rangers zone, which means if I buy the MLB package thing, I can see neither team.
That's nothing like blackout rules, huh? Blackout rules are so much fun.
It just seems dated.
It is. It was dated to make sure that people showed up at games. And, well, we want to make sure that you show up at games before we show something on your local channel. It's a rule that predates cable TV. That's kind of, it's silly to me. But it's also how, baseball gets away with a lot of stuff, especially with Congress that most sports don't necessarily get away with. I do wish that Trevor Bauer felt more comfortable in expressing his opinion about anything and everything. That's a problem he should probably work on. But no, if you want, to your point, there's so many fundamentally broken things. We talk about the average age of the baseball fan getting older and over and older each year. We talk about how baseball, wants to speed up the game, but increase offense. And those two things are completely opposed to one another in the way they're going about it. It really, and this Arizona thing, in my opinion, is just one more indication of a Major League Baseball front office, the administration that understands there's a problem and wants to address the problem, and once again has no clue on how to properly address the problem.
They don't. And, I think the only positive thing, since you and I are pretty smart dudes, we know the game is good enough to survive, and we will eventually end up with a commissioner who actually does know how to fix the game. Scott, thanks for jumping on with us this morning. We're going to talk to you in a few days as we continue our countdown to whenever opening day actually is.
Completely looking forward to it. And I would call for a commissioner that's about 40 years old and somebody young and who used to be a player and who would have a really good feel for the game. Somebody like a Jeter. That might be interesting. So just food for thought.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
So that wraps us up, and we hope everybody's doing well. We hope everybody's safe, staying home, following the social distancing rules. I think it might be kind of fun. I'm going to try to make a mask with some of my favorite minor league baseball gear that due to eating a lot of snacks and Pop-Tarts four times a day, I no longer fit into. So I'm not really getting fat so much as I'm saving my respiratory health. I do want to point out again that we're going to be supporting minor league baseball all week this week. We're using the hashtags, #jerseyon, #tipyourcap, #MILBgear, and #SaveHometownBaseball. Find out what your local team's doing. We talked about what the Corpus Christi Hooks are doing. We talked about the Rumble Ponies. But we also want to bring out a couple of other teams that are doing some fun stuff. The Lexington Legends on April 9th, the day of their opening day, are going to give out some prizes all day. And all they want you to do is share your stash. So I guess you got a good mustache or you can be creative. Use the hashtag share your stash, which is not easy to say. I think I did like 18 takes of that particular line in this episode. Use that hashtag, win some stuff, and support the Lexington Legends. We also do want to shout out to the Rocket City Trash Pandas. This is a team that our heart really goes out to because they came on the scene with one of the best new brands, and they announced it mega early and built up so much excitement that their Facebook group exploded. I've got gear. I've seen gear, other people. And I got to imagine that whole organization is disappointed because they're not starting on time. And, there's always going to be the possibility out there that maybe they don't start until 2021, but they're still doing it. They're still doing things like reading books to kids. They're still doing their best to engage their community. They're being the best version of themselves, and they haven't even been able to throw a pitch yet. So kudos to you guys. And look, I don't know if we're going to play. And nobody wants this more than I do. I don't want it at the expense of people's health. I don't want it at the expense of making this pandemic go longer than it should. On a personal level, I've needed this season. It's been a rough school year. It's just been 2019 wasn't a great year. 2020 is challenging it, of course, but I really needed a season this year. And I needed the break. And those of you who know how much I love my grandson, and he is growing into the being the best little baseball fan out there. I shared a photo of him crying on what was supposed to be MLB's opening day because my daughter had dressed him up in his Astros stuff, and he thought that meant we got to go. And he woke up one morning and in Braxton East said, Ball Ball House, Amain, which is Minute Maid Park, basically. He wanted to take a plane to Minute Maid Park. They live in Oregon. And I wanted to be at a game with my daughter, Jordan. And we had already had plans, and we still have plans. Like, I'm still holding out hope that we're going to get up to the Eugene Emeralds this year, and we're going to take my brand new granddaughter, Kennedy Louise. I'm going to miss not being at a game with my wife, Jessica, and that's going to be a lot longer till we get there. And we always do a walk around at, when we're at a minor league park and the sun's coming down. We've got a beer and we just kind of, you know, put our arms around each other and watch the sunset over a baseball field. There's nothing better than that. So I'm hoping beyond hope that we're going to get to play. But one thing that I've loved, and I really feel strongly about this, is that the baseball community is going to go on and it's going to make it better. From teams and players donating money and resources and food to all the first responders and the people that are struggling at the major league level and the minor league level. To some of the other, who I think are really good original baseball content creators, and I'll name them, you know, Before the Pitch and the Sod Pod and Friars on the Farm and Mansplain Baseball Elsewhere. They're out there being themselves and creating baseball content through their prism and through how they see the game. And that's unique and it's special and it should be celebrated. So through folks like them and Andrew Nelson, who's on the show like literally all the time now, and Stu Clary, our favorite A's fan, who I love this dude, man. He was rewatching the Astros A's and he kept sending me screen grabs of games where the A's were beating the Astros in 2018. And I just asked him how many games they win the division by, but it's fun. That's fun. And we're going to stay connected and we're going to keep loving the game and we're going to keep the game present in our minds. And then when it comes back, it's going to be the best thing ever because it's going to mean that we're safe. It's going to mean that we made it through. And, you know, I think that I'm this close to saying I'm not even going to care about standings. You might not even see me tweet about standings when it comes to the Stros. That I just want to be out there and watching a baseball game. So for now, the best thing we can do is stay connected. I'm going to tweet at those podcasts again so you can follow them and maybe you'll find your new favorite show or you'll get an appreciation for a team that maybe you didn't follow. Like, honestly, I've become a Padres fan due to the folks at the Sod Pod. Like, I consider myself a Padres fan now because of those guys. So you're going to have that opportunity. Now, to the folks at Mansplain, I'd love to become a Braves fan, but there's just too much pain there from the 90s. And so maybe if I can work through that, I'll become a bit of a Braves fan. But no, for real, I'm going to link those folks because it's going to be something fun for you to dive into, to experience, maybe even disagree with, but you're going to get to can experience that baseball love. So until then, support your healthcare workers by staying home, flatten the curve, wear a mask. You know, in fact, make a mask out of your favorite baseball gear and tweet it at us. I want to see it. And if you're a fan of the MILB, support them on social media. And then when they are back, go and thank them by showing up. Thank them for creating coloring sheets for your kids, for reading bedtime stories, for doing things with mascots out in the community to kind of just make you smile. They have been working hard for you. Show them that you care. Show them that you appreciate by going. And as always, everyone stay safe and let's get to it.